So I'm a Ferguson protester, and on August 16th, I was sitting on my couch. It was a Saturday. It was like 1 o'clock in the morning, and I was on Twitter, and I like saw this stuff happening, and I was like, "What is this?" And I was on Instagram, and Brittany Noble, she was like a reporter, and she was doing these like 15-second like news reports of what was happening on Canfield, which is the street that Mike Brown got killed on. And I remember being like, "I want to go. Like, I want to go to St. Louis and see what happened." But I needed to tell somebody because like just going to St. Louis seemed like a big deal. Like August 16th. So I waited till my best friend woke up. He lives in Chicago. And I called him. And I was like, "Donnie, I think I'm going to go." He was like, "Just go." So I literally got in a car. I drove 9 hours to St. Louis. I didn't know anybody. I put on Facebook, "I'm going to St. Louis. Can somebody like find somewhere I can sleep?" And hour seven, like in the, you know, Iowa is a special place. And in like the back hills of Iowa, I get this message. It's like, you know, we found somewhere for you to stay. So I like stayed somewhere, and then I went to West Florissant, which is the street that you all probably know if you saw anything about Ferguson. West Florissant is like the street that we were on. And I went to West Florissant with a sign and with my fist, and my sign said, "My blackness is not a weapon." And that was like the story of my protest. So I'm now one of the visible faces of the protest. So before it started, I had about 800 followers, not on Twitter, and now I have about 65,000. And I say that because in no uncertain terms, like Twitter saved our lives. And when I think about my time on West Florissant, you know, I think about the woman who, like, brought her grill out every day, and she, like, grilled for protesters, or, like, the people who bought pizza, and, like, that's a story that people didn't see when they saw the news. What you saw was, like, the hell that we were going through, which was real, right? So you saw the police telling us that we couldn't stand still. It was illegal to stand still in August, and I was one of the plaintiffs in the court case that got that rule deemed unconstitutional in Missouri. There were also these times where, like, the police were just aggressive, right, for no reason. So I remember the first time I got tear gas, and I remember being like, "I'm pretty smart. The police were coming this way. They didn't clear out the street, so there were cars, like, all behind us, and they started shooting tear gas. And you probably haven't been tear gas, but the canister is hot. So the canister comes out. Tear gas is actually clear, but they put smoke so you can see it. And the tear gas comes, and I'm like, "Do I just follow the smoke, right? Don't go where the smoke is." Like, that is not the right answer. The smoke and the canister, two completely different directions. So literally, I, like, am standing there, and all of a sudden, like, out of a movie, there's a tear gas canister here and here, and behind me are cars, and to my left is a gate. So, like, it's like, oh, this is not good, right? So I literally just run to the right, and, like, I put my face in. And the scary thing about tear gas is I wear contacts, and tear gas can actually make your contacts sear to your eyes. So I remember opening my eyes and being, like, so happy I wasn't blind that, like, the fact that, like, my face was messed up, it was, like, totally fine. And tear gas actually feels like a crazy peppermint scrub, like the most intense peppermint scrub you could ever have. Like, that's, like, what tear gas feels like. One of the things I'll never forget, too, is the people who didn't stand with us in August. Now everybody wants to be a protester, right? It's, like, the cool thing to do. But there were so many people who didn't stand with us, and I'll never forget that. I'll never forget that people from Palestine and taught us how to deal with tear gas. I'll never forget that. I'll never forget the first time I thought I was going to die. I remember the police, like, started rushing the crowds on West Florissant. So all of a sudden, you'd be, like, standing there, and, like, 70 police would just come out of nowhere. And, like, we ran, right? And I remember running with my hands up, and, like, my cell phone cord was, like, falling out of my pocket. The cops I was running, there were cops in front of me. They didn't know what was going on. They were scared, too. They didn't know. So we were all, like, everybody scared. But it was, like, the first time that I thought I was going to die. And I'll never forget that moment. I'll never forget how in August and September, and today is the 185th day of protest. It's the 6-month anniversary of the killing of Mike Brown. Mike Brown died on August 9th. But I'll never forget how I used to keep draft tweets that said, "I love you," to my father and my sister and my nephew and my niece, because if I got killed, like, I wanted them to know, right? And I'll never forget when Von Derrick got killed. So 6 people have been killed in St. Louis since August 9th, one as recent as 2 weeks ago by the police. And I'll never forget when Von Derrick got killed in Shaw. They said that he, like, jumped out of a bush and, like, tried to shoot the police officer. And we were like, A, there's no bush, and B, what black person in America is, like, jumping out of bushes to shoot police? Like, that's crazy. So that happens, and the first night I was in Minneapolis, so Netta, who's, like, one of my close friends, she is, like, going down to the scene, because all the protesters, like, when something happens, like, we tweet and we go, and I'll never forget, all of a sudden I get these texts from Netta. Like, she doesn't say anything, but the texts are her passwords to everything, and it was because she thought she might die, so she was like, "DeRay, just get it." right? And it, but like I was on the couch and all of a sudden it was like Google password, Twitter password, Instagram password. And like, I'll never forget being in an America that made me feel that way, right? That like, I remember the time when I was like, I cannot believe this is America, because the thing that actually radicalized me was kids, right? Like I like fight for kids. I've worked, I'm the senior director of human capital in Minneapolis Public Schools. I believe in education, but there was this thing about like, Mike did it all right, right? Like Mike went to school, Mike was about to go to college and he still got killed, right? And there was this moment about like, you have to be alive to learn. And that was like the thing that radicalized me, right? Which is why I continue to do the fight. And it's interesting because I say like Twitter saved our lives, and like we still sort of tweet our way through the trauma, right? And the trauma is still so real, which is why I don't often talk about the police like in these sort of settings. But I also remember the time that I was in a coffee shop. We're in the coffee shop. They had just released the Mike Brown, the evidence, and I was on the phone with somebody, Sean King, who's like another big tweeter, and all of a sudden people are running in the coffee shop. I'm like, what is, it's the coffee shop. What's happening in the coffee shop? And it's like a safe house too. It's like a, they're like a safe space. And the police tear gas the windows in the front, the door, and the back door. So people are like running in. You can't run outside because it's tear gas. So we go in the basement and you're like, where am I, right? And the police said that like the patio is an extension of the street, and we're like, that's crazy. And there was this moment about like, we're not going to leave, right? We're going to do this all day. Y'all mad? We mad. Everybody mad. We all mad here in St. Louis. And I remember that, right? Like, who gets tear gassed in a coffee shop? And I remember the time that we occupied the police department. Like, we were so slick and like essentially snuck in the police department and like occupied it. It was like 30 of us. And the police were pissed. And you know, and then we like bum rushed the door. So police came, protesters came in and they like threw people, they pepper sprayed us. But I was inside like tweeting, right? Cause I have one of the biggest followers in the protest community nationwide. And I'll never forget the police officer like grabbing my ankles and dragging me out of the police department. Right. So he like drags me to the foyer. This other guy comes, he like starts to bend my hand back. And I say to him like real calm, I'm like, why would you hurt me? I didn't do anything. And he like doesn't know what to do. So he just lets me go. And then this other guy like come, this other officer picks me up and like throws me out the front door. But there was this thing about like, this is America, right? Like this is like crazy and wild, and it's still crazy. So I was just in Atlanta talking to some organizers because Kevin Davis got killed. Kevin Davis was a protester. Kevin Davis is a roommate. He has a girlfriend. They like let somebody sleep on their couch. That guy stabbed his girlfriend. He calls the police to like come get that guy, and the police killed Kevin. And you're like, this is wild, right? And there's this thing about storytelling that I like take away from Ferguson so much, is that like, our stories matter. And the stories that we told in Ferguson that we continue to tell on Twitter not only like moved our community and moved the community in St. Louis, but like people nationwide started protesting. And I remember the first nationwide protest. Like we were like, oh snap, people protesting everywhere, right? Even in Baltimore. Baltimore is the only place where they protested in like a school system, right? So they came into the school board. They caused so much disruption that the board got up and left the room. The students sat in the seats that the commissioners were in, and they like sort of held the meeting, and you're like, I love it, right? Shut it down. Because the reality is that there's like so much to be angry about. There's so much, and people still keep getting killed. It's like this crazy traumatic thing. And Tamir, I'll never forget Tamir Rice, who was 12 and got killed by the police in Cleveland, right? And the officer said that he looked like he was 20. And I don't know if you've seen it, but I remember seeing the video of his sister, right? So Tamir gets killed. You got to see the video. He gets killed in under 3 seconds. So the police officer comes up. The car is not even stopped. The officer gets out, shoots him. Tamir doesn't die, though, for another 16 hours. So his body is, like, on the ground, and they didn't release that video immediately. So the video comes out, and what you see is the police just chilling. They are just, like, it's, like, 15 police, and they're just, like, la-di-da, like, hanging out right there. And then his sister, because he lived across the building, his sister runs up, and they clothesline her. And they put her in the cop car that's actually next to his body. So she just sits there. And then his mother comes out, and they tell her, you have a choice. Either you sit with her or you go with him. And that's like a crazy thing to be in. And at the time, like, she didn't know that Tamir was alive. Like, Tamir actually lived. But what you also see in the video is that they didn't do anything. There was no first aid. There was no, like, nobody tried to save Tamir, which keeps us in protest, right? It's like why the protests continue, because we just see and we live the trauma of police brutality. Thank you.